Welcome to another edition of the 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Bringing to light the stories of real people, their struggles, their successes, is what Rebecca Parish loves to do. An award-winning filmmaker based in Chicago, Rebecca has worked as a producer, director, editor, camerawoman on numerous documentaries, and in 2007, she founded Interchange Productions. In 2012, the company was awarded the YouTube Nonprofit Video Award for Best Use of Videotape for the Social Good. Rebecca's projects as producer-director include Protect Our Defenders, a 90-minute interactive documentary web series and engagement campaign that revealed the epidemic of rape in the U.S. military. Victims shared their personal stories and shed light on the need for systemic changes in the training, investigation, and adjudication of sexual violence. There's Crossing Boundaries, which explored race, class, gender, and power in a small Mississippi Delta town through the lens of the 2008 presidential primaries. And now, Radical Grace, a documentary that follows three amazing, passionate, committed American nuns who risk their standing in the church after being censured by the Vatican for radical feminism, even though they faithfully honor their vow of obedience to God. The film raises the question, what does it mean for these women to be both devoted to and in conflict with such a powerful religious institution? Rebecca, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Did you always know that you wanted to tell stories?
You know, I don't think so. I started actually in still photography, and I was very interested in framing images. So I guess it was a way of storytelling, you know, within a single image. And then I began studying documentary still photography and realized that, you know, putting pictures together, you could create a story. And from there, I moved into video because I felt that I used to lament that I wasn't living in the era of Life magazine where people looked at still photographs as a way to understand the world.
And to learn about the world, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I said, well, okay, I have to just accept the time that I'm living in. And while I think that, you know, still photography is still really powerful in our society, the average person doesn't use still photography as a way to learn about things. They're more connected through video. So then I began to explore documentary film, and realized that I had a knack for that as well, and that I could try to tell stories that way.
Well, then apparently you were especially interested in those who don't have a voice. So Describe some of those projects and how that marriage came to be, or those marriages came to be.
Yeah, I was particularly interested in people who maybe don't have a voice or whose voice could be strengthened through the storytelling devices that I could provide. Basically, I've always been interested in social issue storytelling, both when I was doing still photography and then when I moved into film. Most recently with this project of the nuns, it really started because a mutual friend had worked with a group of sisters to found a school for people who are formerly incarcerated. And one of those sisters was Sister Jean, who ended up being in our film. And she just felt that their story needed to be told, and so she reached out to me with the idea. And for me, I'm very interested in how doing social justice work can actually be a spiritual practice. And I discovered that sisters, nuns in the United States have really, especially since the 60s, sort of developed particular ways of approaching that question. And I became interested in exploring how they've approached that. So personally, it's something that I wanted to learn from.
There's another project that you worked on, The Calling, which was this outreach series for PBS that followed the stories of young Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, and Muslim Americans training for religious leadership. That sounds really fascinating.
The executive producer of this film, it was actually, that was his project. And I came onto the project. They had the film, and then they also had a what we call in our documentary lingo an engagement campaign. Mm-hmm. Basically, you're taking the film and you're seeing like you're adding different supplemental materials to it to help it be useful beyond the narrative of the film itself.
So it has a longer life shelf. Or shelf life,
I mean. And so it becomes accessible to different people who maybe would not be the normal PBS viewing audience or something like that, or who don't go to independent film festivals. And so I actually was involved in the engagement campaign side of things. And the engagement campaign was called What's Your Calling? And they took the idea of a calling and said, okay, how can we look at this? In addition to looking at it in a religious context, how can we, it's similar to what you're really doing with this project, actually. It's talking to people who are living a life that is their, is what feels like what they're meant to do in the world. So it could be a violinist. It could be an activist, all different types of people, including people from different faith traditions who are living, you know, a calling that's in the way that you would normally think about it in a faith tradition.
Did it surprise you at all that there are still young people who want to explore, I'm using the term in quotes, professions in religion?
I think it's not, I don't think it's surprising, but I think that the people who are doing it are usually very interesting people because in a way it for me, especially the people who are young progressive people who want to work in a faith tradition, because, you know, a lot of young people are leaving faith altogether because they've been turned off.
By
the messages that they see coming from religious leaders.
Or the intolerance that they see within their religious organizations.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think it's really cool when you meet young people or older people like the sisters too, who don't necessarily hold the views of some of the leadership, who disagree with some of the leadership, but then decide that that's one of the reasons why they need to engage and kind of reclaim their tradition.
My guest today is Rebecca Parrish, who is a producer, director, editor, camerawoman on numerous documentaries, and in 2007 founded her own company, Interchange Productions, and is currently working on Radical Grace, a documentary that follows three committed American nuns. So let's talk about this documentary. It's taken you 3 years to put this together. Is that considered a long time?
For this style of filmmaking, it's not a long time. So the film uses what we call verite approach to filmmaking, which is that we're filming real scenes evolve. We're filming life happening as opposed to, you know, doing sit-down videos, sit-down interviews. We do interviews as well. It's not pure verite, but the fact that you're trying to film life happening and trying to create a narrative arc out of real life, it takes time for people's lives to have a story arc. So you need to film often over a long period of time, several years, for a person to be able to experience the kind of change or hopefully transformation that we yearn for in the stories that we see and that create meaning.
So you started this documentary in 2011?
In early 2011, I think we started filming, and we were actually doing research in 2010.
Where did the money come from?
All different sources. You know, we're still fundraising right now, actually, to be able to have the funds that we need to finish the film. So in documentary filmmaking, often you sort of get funds, and then you do some work, and then you continue fundraising as you're going through the process of making the film. So some of the funding came from larger funding institutions, and then a lot of funding came from individual donors. We've run several crowdfunding campaigns where, you know, we might have small thank you gifts for donors to just kind of make it fun to participate in the filmmaking itself by supporting the project. For the last year and a half, it has been almost entirely all I've done. But I, you know, because of the fact that it is hard to fundraise and it is hard to get the funds that we need for this project, I have to take other work in addition to this. So I do have to split my energies a little bit more than maybe I'd like to. But I always try to make the film, try to keep things set up so that when I'm taking on another project, it's at a time where it's not going to hurt the film.
Sure, it's a downtime for the big project that you're working on. So let's talk about the three women who feature prominently in this movie, the three nuns. Let's start with Sister Jean. How did you meet her and describe her for us? Because I read that she doesn't at all fit the stereotype of a nun.
Yeah, none of the sisters that we follow really fit what I would think of as the stereotype of a nun. Actually, before I was introduced to Sister Jean and started this project, I actually didn't know, I had never met a sister that I knew of. So I was not raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a context for nuns in the United States and how they had evolved.
You kind of wondered if there were any nuns left in the United States.
I mean, I would see people walking around that were clearly nuns. I mean, they were dressed in habit, mm-hmm. and that's how it's most obvious.
Sure.
And so my images of nuns really came from the movies, you know, from Blues Brothers, you know, these very harsh stereotypes.
Uh-huh.
So I had no idea what real sisters were like and what their lives were like.
Mm-hmm.
So I met Sister Jean. She exploded all of my expectations, and I really connected with her approach to faith and spirituality and social justice. And I really felt like she had something that I also wanted, and that I felt like sharing her story and what she had to offer would be something that we could all benefit from learning about.
And we could all relate to. Uh-huh. So what's her bent?
She really is an example of, I think, the way that a lot of sisters live their lives in right now in the United States, which is that, you know, she does social service and social justice work, and she... And in particular, what that is that she works with people who have been recently released from jail or prison, and sort of helps get them the skills that they need to be able to hopefully successfully reenter society. And she does that with a lot of love and a lot of grounding, I guess, in the reality of what people are facing.
And where does her support come from? And I don't necessarily mean her financial support. Does it come from her orders? She works in Chicago, right? She's kind mm-hmm. of your neighbor. Is this an organized effort on her part, or is she just one lone woman who's doing this?
So she works at an organization called St. Leonard's Ministries, which is based in the west side of Chicago. She's part of that organization. And so she has the support of the staff. I mean, she really gets actually a lot of her energy that fuels her really comes from the men that she's working with, which was a part of her story that really moved me, was that it's not about what she gives them. It's also about what they give her and what they teach her that she can, you know, bring into her own life. So it's sort of reversing that way that you might traditionally think about providing social services. And to me, that's an example of her spirituality and of what we can learn from sisters and how they approach the social justice and social service work mm-hmm. that they do.
So that's sister number one. And then mm-hmm. there is Chris Schenck. What's her mm-hmm. story?
So Chris founded and runs, I mean, she recently retired, but an organization called Future Church. And it's a church reform organization. So I was really excited to meet Chris because I had never thought about, you know, before this project, I thought if you do not like what your religious leadership is doing, then you just leave. You either take it or leave it, or you kind of go along with it, but basically you compartmentalize your life. And you know, you deal with what you don't like in church, and then you go and have the rest of your life. And so I was so excited to learn about people like Sister Chris and the other members of her organization who are actually actively working to change the institution. So they actually advocate to the Vatican for things like women's ordination as deacons, or for priests to be able to be married, or for the decentralization of decision making. You know, the Catholic Church is one of the most centralized religious institutions, and she thinks that that's a problem.
And how's that working for her?
Well, you know, she understands that it's a long term process. She doesn't expect change overnight,
or in her lifetime, I would venture to say.
Yeah. Or maybe in her lifetime, unfortunately. So in the 60s, there was the Second Vatican Council. And that was a meeting of all of the cardinals and bishops at the Vatican. And they really changed how they wanted to how they thought that the church should approach the modern world. And it was about, you know, rather than trying to be walled off and separate from the world, there they wanted to engage the world, and they wanted to be of service to the world. And there was a lot of, you could say, liberalizing aspects to that. And so at that time, people, you know, including Sister Chris, felt like, you know, women priests were just around the corner. And then the popes that came after the Second Vatican Council
put stop signs on those corners.
Put stops on that. And so the sisters continued moving in that direction, and the institutional church started retrenching. So, you know, you never know. We could have another shift like that where it does open things up. And if you've laid the groundwork, you know, if you've had activists and organizers like Chris laying the groundwork for all this time before, it'll be that much more doable.
I understand. Now, your third and final nun, Sister Simone Campbell. She spoke at the 2012 DNC, and she's really been out there. Describe her for us.
Sister Simone is a lobbyist in D.C., and she is at Network, which is a Catholic social justice lobby. She's the executive director, and they have two aspects to what they do. She's a registered lobbyist, so she lobbies on the Hill for social justice and social services, and then she also organizes, you know, the populace.
Does she have an organization supporting her?
The organization she's at is Network, but her order is the Sisters of Social Service.
Uh-huh.
So all three sisters are each part of a different order.
I didn't ask you where Sister Shank, where Sister Chris works out of.
Yeah, she lives in Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, so then they're all over the place, these three
mm-hmm.
women.
Yeah, and Simone is in D.C.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
So Simone really rose to prominence, I would say, in 2010 at the time of the debate over the Affordable Care Act. And while the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops opposed healthcare reform, Sister Simone and others organized Catholic voices that were in favor of reform. And so, of course, the media ate that up. They called it a holy war.
Mm-hmm.
But it was what she did was really important because there were Catholic senators and congresspeople who wanted to support the legislation, but who were feeling troubled that the bishops were opposing it. And so she gave legitimacy to Catholics who wanted to support it. And the bishops were claiming that it would provide funding for abortion. And Sister Simone and the other sisters that she was organizing with said no, that it actually, if you read the law, that it doesn't provide any new funding, any federal funding for abortion. And so they also sort of provided legitimacy to that.
I would venture to guess that all three women have, aside from their religion and their commitment, what else they have in common is their age. They're up there, aren't they?
They are, yeah. There aren't very many young women
who are joining the order, correct?
There was a huge swell in the 50s. And then now a lot of the sisters would say that it's sort of returning back to how it used to be historically, where the orders were much smaller. But yeah, there's a huge, you know, collective of aging sisters, which was another reason why I really felt this story needed to be recorded, because I didn't want to lose sort of institutional memory of what they've created and how they approach their work.
Once again, if you're just joining us, my guest today is Rebecca Parrish, a filmmaker who is working on the documentary Radical Grace about three activist nuns. So what's the point of this documentary, Rebecca? What is it that you want to get across? What's your goal?
For me, it's really about looking at two different approaches to faith and religion in modernity. So for me, the perspective that's represented by the institution throughout the institution of the church leadership throughout much of the film is really more about judgment, and some people are closer to God and others are further, and that kind of thing. Whereas the sisters represent an approach to faith and spirituality that resonates more with me, which is about how we're all interconnected and how we need to help each other and be there for each other. And you know, I think that it's important that for the progressive movement to really reclaim faith, because the religious right has sort of, I think, sold us on a false narrative that faith is opposed to equality and social justice. And that's not true.
Do you think that this documentary is one of the most personal ones that you've been involved with and speaks to you in a different way than your other projects?
Yeah, for me, it is very personal. Like I, as I said before, you know, I was drawn to this story because I knew that these sisters had something that I could learn and that I yearned for in my own life. Even though I don't share their faith, you know, I would identify more as an agnostic, but what I do connect with and the sort of in my own life, the moments that have felt the most spiritual for me were moments of working for justice or helping somebody who had a need that I could help fulfill, where I felt so connected to them. And that's, to me, that's really how the sisters live every day. That's how they live their faith.
So they have a nice marriage between the struggle, but also this joyful irreverence, in a sense,
mm-hmm.
right? That
right.
They're able to unite both of those parts.
Absolutely.
When you finish with this film, and I hope you see a light at the end of the tunnel for yourself, what would you like to do next?
Right now, my focus is on, you know, when we finish the film.
How close to finishing it are you?
We really hope to finish this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, as I said before, it's going to depend on funding is a big factor for when we're able to finish. We are at the editing phase, but we need additional funds to continue editing. So the next step after this film is really the engagement campaign, and it's working with community organizations to help support them to be able to leverage the film to advance their mission. And so we actually have three key components of the engagement campaign. One is supporting Catholic church reform organizations. And, you know, that's something that I've actually become very passionate about, you know, as a non-Catholic. And one reason is that the Catholic Church has a very powerful influence, actually, in society and, you know, in our political system. And what's interesting to me is that the majority of everyday Catholics actually don't share the political values of the people who are in power and leadership in the church right now. I mean, we have Pope Francis right now, but a lot of the, you know, priests and bishops and cardinals in the United States are much more conservative. And so I really think that it's important that the everyday Catholics are empowered to speak and have a voice and to be able to represent their faith, you know, within our political system.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to support the Catholic reform and social justice organizations. That's a big part of how we want to use the film. The other big piece is that, you know, there has been for a long time a divide between the sort of mainstream feminist organizations and movements and faith-based organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're really at a time where they are actually starting to bridge some of that divide. And the feminist movement is realizing that they need to include faith in their organizing. And so we see that this film can be a tool to bring people together across those lines so that we have organizations that are partners from the feminist side of things and from the faith-based side of things, that they can co-host screenings and then they can have dialogues coming out of that. So that's another big thing. And then of course, the other piece that I kind of mentioned before is kind of a rebranding of faith as something that can be progressive and social justice oriented. And that's something that's already been happening and that we think that, you know, we can help support that. So that's really the next thing. I'm not even thinking about what the next film is after this.
Because this sounds like such a monumental task. I mean, you work so hard. It's 3 years in the making, 3 years plus in the making. And then, you know, documentaries are obviously not feature films. So, you know, getting them out there to a wide audience is not such an easy feat.
we're in conversation with some different television broadcasters, and we do anticipate and hope for a TV broadcast, but that only reaches a certain audience. And if you're looking for your film to make, and also, of course, there are independent film festivals, but if you're looking for your film to have a social impact, you really have to go figure out, okay, who needs to see this film from that perspective? And you have to be very targeted and actually figure out how to bring the film to them, how to meet them where they're at.
So give us your website, and if listeners want to get in touch with you and how they can see a piece of the film or follow all of your progress, tell us how we can go about doing that.
Sure. The website is radicalgracefilm.com, and there's a trailer up on there, and there's a blog with updates and also contact information for me personally.
Also, your company is
Interchange Productions, that's plural, productions.com. And that features the work of this film as well as some previous projects. And then also a big part of what I do is films for mini documentaries for nonprofit organizations to help them tell their stories, whether it's for fundraising or reaching out to people who could use their services. So there's also some examples of that on the Interchange Productions website.
There are always plenty of stories to tell. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. I really enjoyed meeting you and getting to hear about your work, about your company, and about Radical Grace. Lots of luck.
Thanks so much.
Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at the 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.